You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good game?
Yep, rolling along. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com, 710 Sports app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. Come find us. Come listen, subscribe, so you just get it delivered right to your phone every single morning. What could be easier than that?
Maybe leave a review, the
if you don't
creative
mind.
Review that you can read the next day.
I read a good one this morning. If you go back, you can listen to the 6 o'clock hour. It's like a top 10 list of kind of callers that might be, enjoyed slash driven off the show based on
revered.
Annoying me. Yeah, so, there's some good stuff over there. I'll try to read you guys another one a little bit later in the morning. So Jake and I have been kind of going back and forth. Jake Heaps, of course, of the Jake and Stacy Show, former quarterback, local legend here, first time at Skyline High School. We got a texter who always calls him Jay Keeps, which I think is fun.
I think it's a voice to text.
I hope it is. I think it's also possible that that person thinks that's Jake's name, and they just keep saying Jay Keeps as opposed to Jake Heaps. But either way, Jake and I have been kind of going back and forth about what the Seahawks need to do this offseason, and I took a little umbrage with something he had said, I don't know, when was that, Monday, right? And so yesterday came in and was responding to, you know, some of this idea of like, oh, well, the Chiefs built around one person, everybody's built around that one guy, and so it's they're successful that way. And I say, I don't know, I watched the playoffs and came away with something different. I watched and saw Joe Burrow essentially, you know, overcome a sieve of an offensive line to throw 350 yards and throw for 350 and beat a good team. Like, that's what I saw, right?
To be fair, Ryan Tannehill throwing three picks is part of that equation, too, for beating that team.
It is, but he still threw for 350 and came up with the big moments,
yeah,
late, which is what you pay a quarterback,
yep,
to do. And
sack nine
and
times.
Their offensive line stinks, right? That team is not entirely built right now around Burrow. They obviously went out and got him a stud wide receiver, but they haven't protected him yet or anything like that.
Well, and that stud wide receiver came at the expense of Penny Sewell.
Absolutely. So, I mean, they've built around him-ish, but he's just elevated the people around him and helped them get better, and now they're sitting in an AFC Championship game. You know, this is the same type of stuff we would say about Russell Wilson, that he's always elevated the people around him, and one of the key questions we've asked about this past season. What happened to that? For years, Russell Wilson elevated the people in the offense around him. Why did that stop this year? Anyway, Jake responds and made some pretty good points about some of the mistakes that they've made, and especially free agency and the draft and just sort of the lack of talent, etc. But when he finally closed it up, I think this is where he and I may end up finding some points of agreement.
What are your priorities? What are your priorities as a team? And how do you go about building that team? Right? When you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, for example, what is their clear-cut priority? It is the offense. It is, we are going to do everything around Patrick Mahomes. So when Patrick Mahomes has a big contract, or he already signed his big contract, and Stacy, in 2022, when he finally has a cap hit that's going to be $35+ million, you know what I still expect? I still expect the Kansas City Chiefs to find a way to put weapons around Patrick Mahomes and to provide tremendous protection for him. Now, what's going to be the big question mark? What it always has been for the Kansas City Chiefs over the last 4 years is, what does this defense look like? How is this defense going to be? And they haven't been great, because that's the sacrifice that they've made. That's a philosophical choice. And guess what? It's worked really well for them, because they've been super elite in the area that they decided to be elite in. And so, you know, what I would ask Mike Salk is, okay, what do the Seattle Seahawks want to be elite in? What do they want to be elite in? And does the money and the resources that they are allocating, do they directly contribute to the formula that is what they want to be elite in?
Jake, I totally agree. The Seahawks have not done a good job of determining what they want to be elite in and then going after it. Part of that is Pete's idea of balance, but I understand that that's not a good enough reason. You can't be okay at everything and succeed in the NFL. My impression of what Pete would truly like, though, I don't think Jake or Russ or a few others would actually want them to truly commit to. Now, I could be wrong, and Jake, I'm sure, will tell me when I am. He has no problems doing so, so I don't. Sure, I'll take my medicine
as
usual.
It's a gift.
But I, yeah, exactly. Everybody loves to tell me when I'm wrong, and thankfully I'm wrong often enough that everybody gets their opportunity. It's an equal opportunity to tell Mike when he's wrong. The Seahawks have not done a good job of being elite at one thing since the end of the Legion of Boom era. And let's all be very clear. That's what the Seahawks should be elite in. They should be an elite defensive team. They should. That's what Pete wants them to be, I think, in his core. That's what John Schneider, I think, understands of what the assignment is. And they failed to do that. I mean, clear and simple. What has been the failure of the last, let's call it 5 or 6 years of Seahawks football? It's not the offense. It's the defense. I think that is as obvious as the day is long. This failure of the last few years of Seahawks football has nothing to do with the offense. For all of the conversation, it's easier to talk about offense. It's fun. It's sexy. Quarterbacks, etc. So we talk a lot about the offense. But the failure of the last 5 or 6 years of Seahawks football is on defense. They have failed to be the elite defensive football team that Pete Carroll wants them to be. And if Jake were here, I'll speak his part, he would say yes. So when you can't do that, why don't you build around the one thing you have in Russell Wilson? And I'll now play Pete's part, which I tend to agree with, which would say, The thing to do is to allow Russ to do his thing with the couple of resources that he has, and he'll be good. But what I really need is an elite defense. And Pete just got to go commit to that. You just got to go do it. If you want to have an elite defense, go get elite players to play on your defense. Stop, you know, messing around in free agency with these, you know, half-hearted attempts to bring in guys on with value. Go get guys that are good. Like, you're running out of time here. That's why they went and pulled the trigger on Jamal Adams. Now, we can debate whether or not they got the right guy. By all indications, right now, if you take the temperature of that deal today, they did not, and they overpaid for him twice. But the idea was there, the recognition that the problems they had were on defense. I agree with Jake's take about what they're doing in Kansas City. They're going to sacrifice, because you have to sacrifice something. You can't be great at everything in the NFL. They're going to make some level of sacrifice on the defensive side of the ball in Kansas City in order to be great on offense, right? That's what they want. They're all about their offense with their offensive coach and Andy Reid, and they've drafted one of the best, arguably the best quarterback in the game in Patrick Mahomes, and they're going to put all those resources on around him specifically to make that unit elite, and if the defense gives up points, we're just going to have to go outscore them. Fine.
But they've had a couple of years now where they've had the same problem as the Seahawks, where their defense has started out really bad.
Mm-hmm.
But both times they've got it together by the end of the season. I think the difference is that the Seahawks, when they've turned it around and got their defense together, then maybe the offense isn't playing as well. They can never get everything right
in
at the
sync,
same time.
Right. That is also true. The best solution for me is to never have your defense be a problem. Pete Carroll wants an elite defense. Go get one. Just go build an elite defense. Right? I mean, we'll talk through this. I'll beat the drum for my 5-point plan to fix the Seahawks defense all off season long, because to me, that's the crucial key for improving the Seahawks. It's not compromising with Russ on how much he cooks. It's not about that. He can cook, he can not cook, whatever. Like, I think that they're trying to build around Russell Wilson's strengths. And I don't think Russell needs the kinds of players around him to have that kind of elite offense. And what Russell's great at is elevating players, right? Finding time, being creative. Again, elevating the people around him, using his legs. And I hope he's still able to do that at least a little bit. Maybe that's going away. But a power running game and then play action off of it and scoring enough. Russell's great at those things. But they need to concentrate on the defensive side of the ball. And every single year, let's take a look at the games the Seahawks have lost in the postseason. Obviously, this past year is such a mess, but go back to the year before that. Why did the Seahawks lose to the Rams? I will give you three reasons the Seahawks lost that game to the Rams, and it has nothing to do with running the ball. They lost to the Rams because of a weird, fluky pick six. They lost because DJ Reed fumbled the ball in the punt. And they lost because while they turned the ball over twice, their defense didn't do anything to bother an injured Jared Goff or that other random dude who started the game early enough to throw a pick. John Wofford? Was that his name?
Wofford.
Sure. Swafford? Hudson Swafford?
I don't know how fluky that play was, though, because we heard that the Rams were expecting it. They had seen it, so that was a coaching issue.
Fine. It was a Brian Schottenheimer issue as a coach, but it's still a little... I mean, that play is supposed to be safe. It's supposed to be an extension of the running game. That's how you end up losing the game. But the biggest factor to me is your defense didn't do enough. They didn't cause any turnovers. They didn't suffocate the Rams, even when the Rams didn't have it. That Rams defense last year was significantly better than its offense. And they, I was not like shocked entirely that the Seahawks struggled against that defense. I was shocked that their defense wasn't able to do anything. And quite frankly, that was the story of last year. Let's go back a couple years before that. You want to go to the Dallas game? Dallas loss in the playoffs. I know that the big narrative is whether or not Russell Wilson should have thrown the ball more. Did they try to run it too much? I watched that game. They couldn't run it. They couldn't throw it either. I know that, oh, they should have thrown it more. Every time Russ dropped back to pass, there were nine guys in his face. They weren't going to be any better throwing the ball more in that game. You know what the problem in that game was? Their defense. They lost that game because on 3rd and 15, Dak Prescott waltzed right in front of the two best players on your defense, Frank Clark and Bobby Wagner, and it went for a first down or maybe it was a touchdown. That's why you lost the game. Your defense couldn't stop Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, not the offense.
So if you don't think they should be built like the Bengals or like the Chiefs, where you're going to need a Mahomes or a Burrow to kind of carry the team, Is there a team in the playoffs that you think they should be more built?
I mean, honestly, in some ways, it's funny. It's the Rams. The Rams, I think, have the best defense in the playoffs. And I don't know who's going to... I mean, this year might not be the best year to point at it. The Bucs last year certainly was a pretty good example. They had some guys on offense, obviously. They brought back an older Rob Gronkowski, and they have Mike Evans. I mean, like, they got some dudes, obviously. Leonard Fournette's a good running back. But they didn't win the game because of those guys. They won the game. They won the Super Bowl because of their defense, their defensive line. You know who I want the Seahawks to be built like? The Seahawks. I want them to be built in Pete Carroll's image. I want them to be built the way Pete wants a team built. So, yeah, Jake, you and I absolutely agree. Figure out what you want to be elite at and then go do it. And I think what Pete wants to be elite at is having a defense. Great. Then go build an elite-level defense. Let Russ figure out the offense as best as he can with the weapons you give him and go dominate like you did before. That's what Pete knows. That's what he wants to do. Stick with what you're great at. And I think that's their quickest pathway to success. All right. I want to spend a couple of minutes here on the Hall of Fame. David Ortiz goes in yesterday. Yes, we spent a while talking about Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and steroids and stuff and good phone calls yesterday. But David Ortiz is a legend. David Ortiz is great. He's one of my favorite players of all time. He's meaningful to me personally. He despite the fact that he once stiffed me on a tip, David Ortiz is one of my all-time favorites.
Maybe I can't let that go.
I was parking cars at some of the clubs in Boston one night when I was trying to break into the industry, and Ortiz and his whole group all came by and I parked like six of their cars, left them all up front right there for them. And like at this place, like there was a dude who showed up with a Lambo all the time, and like he'd always drop $100 for anybody. You know, I'd leave it up front, he'd give me a $100 bill. Like there was some pretty heavy tipping. Kept all six cars, whatever it was, up front all night, end of the night. Like, hey, here you guys go. Here are the keys. They're like, hey, thanks, man.
Maybe he was mad that he had to get in the car and put the seat all the way back.
No, I didn't touch the car. Dude, I wouldn't even get in. Like, I would just leave them right up front.
Oh,
like, here you go. Like, went to go, like, hey, you guys got, like, thanks, man. Really appreciate it. Like, okay. Thanks for winning in 2004. I guess that's okay. I'm going to let this go. Like, when people say you get to drink free in town forever and ever, generally you still have to tip, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, whatever. He, I'm sure, didn't know, and I'm sure it was the fault of somebody else in the group. So.
Well, was there anybody banging the drum yesterday that he didn't deserve to go in?
I hope not. I mean, Ortiz is in. I hope it just doesn't detract or distract from it because the conversation is about Bonds and Clemens and the steroid guys. Ortiz is probably in that group also. I mean, he tested positive, and the story came out there as well. But maybe it wasn't as official. It wasn't as well documented. He's a better person. People like him.
He didn't have a freak transformation physically later in his career.
It was earlier in his career, but he went from being a guy here in Seattle and then Minnesota that wasn't great, and then all of a sudden became one of the best players in baseball history and a Hall of Famer. So I think you can write that story, certainly, if you want to.
Okay.
But he's just so much fun. He played the game with so much joy. He's responsible for some of the great baseball moments of my lifetime. I mean, Game 4... You know, everyone talks about the David Roberts steal in 2004, but it's Ortiz who eventually wins that game, and Joe Buck had a great call.
Ortiz in the deep right field. Back is Sheffield. We'll see you later tonight.
I mean, Joe Buck channeling his dad saying, we'll see you later tonight. And I mean, just how long the game was. Pretty amazing. And then, the game 5, I was there, so I didn't hear this live. I didn't hear the call, but it's one of my favorite Joe Buck calls.
Ortiz fights it off center field. and run into the plate, and he can keep on running to New York. Game six tomorrow night.
Joe Buck got really good at some point along the way. Like, he was kind of hated early in his career. At some point, I think he just really grew into being a number one guy.
It's like a 14 or 15 inning game, that one?
Yeah, God, it took forever. We were there for so long. It was so cold. I was so sick, but it was awesome. And Ortiz ended up coming up with the walk-off hit in that one. He's an amazing person. And probably the best moment of his career came in 2013. I talk a little bit about this in Need to Know. But I'll just play you the sound. I mean, after the marathon bombing, and I was in Boston for that, it was awful. It was scary. And the city really did kind of come together in a lot of ways. And when they finally got back to playing baseball at Fenway, Ortiz just said this.
This jersey that we wear today, it doesn't say Red Sox. It say Boston. This is our city.
Seedy.
The best, man.
Love it.
Saying that live on television, and then afterwards the FCC, the same FCC, like from the whole wardrobe malfunction and all that, was just like, yeah, we stand with Big Poppy.
You just gotta love him.
You have to. And if you want to bring this back around to the Mariners, honestly, the personality, the larger than life, I'm hoping that that's what Julio Rodriguez is, because that's a lot of the conversation about him is the joy and the presence and the aura. Hopefully he's able to do what David Ortiz did in his career, because Ortiz was a legend. Time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
NFL free agency starts March 16th, and when it does, the Seahawks need to handle it differently than they have in the past. There is almost no doubt that their approach to free agency since 2013... it just simply hasn't worked. I'll give credit to Michael Sean Dugar. He was asking yesterday, when have they exited free agency appreciably better than they started it? Anybody? I'll wait. The answer, I think, is 2013, when they brought in Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett. Since then, what free agent have they brought in? Not a trade. Quandre Diggs was a trade. What free agent have they brought in from the outside that has helped them the most? Gerald Everett? DJ Fluker, DJ Reed. The list is short over the course of what is now nearly 10 years. So why is that? Is it about John? Is it about Pete? Is it a philosophy? Is it Russ? The whole thing is crazy. And regardless, it needs to be different this year. NFL free agency can be dangerous. You don't want to spend big on a player whose reputation is better than his actual level of play. I get that. But you can also be too conservative, and I think the Seahawks have now proven that. After spending a little on a lot of guys, it simply has not paid off. 16 years after starting in New Orleans, Sean Payton has decided to step away. Says he won't be coaching next year. His contract goes for three more seasons, so if he does want to, the Saints would have to agree to some sort of a trade. We may see him in the media before we see him coaching. When I think of the Saints, there's like before Peyton and after, and it obviously coincides with before Drew Brees and after. They together took a franchise that had never been particularly successful, elevated to must-watch status, won a Super Bowl together. I don't know if things would have been different if Brees had ended up in Miami with Nick Saban. Maybe we wouldn't be honoring Sean Payton today, but that's not how it went, and they did form a great tandem. That combo was pretty magical and certainly must-watch.
I felt the time was right for me. I felt the time was right, and it's something that I've been thinking about. You know, I think that... Look, you have close friends in the industry. I've lost a few close friends in this industry in the last two or three years. And also, forget football. There's other things. I looked at it as an opportunity also to see my kids more, to travel some more, to get in better shape.
Good for him. I recommend a green smoothie diet. If he wants to talk, I can tell him all about it. Mine's like fluorescent green today. Looks pretty good. Now makes the ninth head coaching opening in the league. Nearly a third of the league open. Defensive coordinator Dennis Allen could be the logical replacement. He does have head coaching experience.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, I mentioned it just a moment ago. Congratulations to David Ortiz, the lone player going into the Hall of Fame yesterday after just barely cracking the 75% threshold in his first year of eligibility. He got the call with his family and Pedro Martinez.
Hello, I'm trying to reach David Ortiz, please.
This is David Ortiz.
Hello, David. This is Jack O'Connell with the Baseball Writers Association of America. I'm calling you from Cooperstown, New York, to let you know that the Baseball Writers have elected you to the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes!
It's pretty great. Although I also imagine them calling like Barry Bonds, like, Barry, this is Jack O'Connell of the Baseball Writers Association of America.
It's like, yes, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm calling to tell you that in your 10th year of eligibility, you have once again fallen short.
Click.
And will not be going into the Baseball Hall of Fame. What? Why did you call me to tell me that? I mean, do you think they call? They must just, that's got to be so sad. You're just waiting by the phone and nothing happens when you're that close.
He had to have known it wasn't happening this year.
I'm sure he did. As much as anybody, I think what Ortiz did for the Red Sox to win in 2004 and break that curse, the walk-offs in games 4 and 5 I just played you, they were just amazing. He carried his team to World Series victory in 2013. A look at the numbers, regular season are enough to get him in. He had a 931 career OPS. That's phenomenal. But it went up in the postseason. A 947 career OPS in the postseason. Throw in that, what he said about the marathon bombing in 2013. He is a Hall of Famer by any measure and did all of it with smile and joy that we should admire in any athlete. So congrats to David Ortiz. Good news. Continued progress yesterday between the league and the union as they are racing now to get a deal done before what's kind of an unofficial February 1st deadline that would keep spring training intact. The league compromised on a couple of core economic issues, offering to raise the minimum salary, though not as far as the players want, warming to the idea of a bonus pool for exceptional players that are still arbitration eligible. I like that idea. And then also open to a draft lottery, which I think is a waste of time. Still nothing close to a deal. But I think the best news is they are also going to work on some non-economic issues here in the next few days in the hopes that if a deal gets struck, they can get it done even more quickly.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Yeah, tough night for the Kraken. They played with a lead much of it, but were not able to hold on. They fall 4-2 to Nashville. Goals from McCann and Larson. Philip Grubauer, I did not think, had a very good night in net. A couple of shots that I'm sure he would like back. Kraken now head out on the road. They will be in Pittsburgh tomorrow. NBA, Joel Embiid on a tear. 42 more points last night as Philly tops New Orleans. Warriors back on track, a blowout win over Dallas. Boston just destroys Sacramento, 128-75, a 53-point drubbing in Sacramento. Not what you're looking for if you're a Kings fan like me. So there you go. I mean, I'm not really, but I just kind of follow the Kings because my friend who lives there.
The Kraken game last night.
Yeah.
First time I got to
see. You were
there.
Yeah.
And I went to, I think, one game since they have now improved the opening ceremonies of how that all goes, you know, where they lowered the tentacle and all that thing. So I finally got to see all of it.
What'd you make of the whole tentacle thing?
That is impressive.
Pretty cool, right?
It's really,
yeah, I liked
really
it.
Good. And they had Brandon Tanev on the Twins doing the release the Kraken thing.
How was that?
He can use a little work in the showmanship department of
right.
how that execution goes. But I will say, when they throw him up on the, it's dark, Twins go on, it's his jersey.
And for people who don't know, the Twins are the two giant scoreboards. That for whatever reason, they've named the Twins, which sounds inappropriate, but that's what they've calling them.
Anyway, so it's all dark. They throw his jersey up on there, and you're like, oh, cool. And then he turns around. You're like, oh, it's actually Tanev. And he has that like deer in the headlights look, and then just pulls the microphone up and just kind of reads it word for word like a script without
release the Kraken.
Yeah, it was.
I love that he became a fan favorite because he's such like a maniac on the ice.
Right.
But then off of it, you're like, wow, he's like almost a little too chill. Like,
well, and that's
crank
sort of
up the energy.
That's so typical, right? Like, there's a guy who's interesting and entertaining in the way he plays. They're like, oh, let's make him. You know, he's gonna be funny. Put him out there, and like, oh. No, it's just sort of the way he plays. He's not like Chris Jericho, where like he's got the like you expect him
right.
to come on the mic and be like, "Welcome to Raw is Tanev." Like that's not necessarily who he's gonna be. He's still just more of a player.
He's still just an athlete who's never had
exactly.
to do that. And he they also Davy Jones, man, they're leaning full into the therapy dog.
Did you get to meet him?
I did not. They had a couple other pups around though that they were doing from the same adoption agency that
oh,
we got
nice.
To go meet and
yeah.
pet.
How were they?
I did the
kind of
crowd
rude.
Was too big.
Some of the dogs kind of rude, didn't treat you well last night.
Didn't tip me when I parked their car.
Exactly. This dog is just quite frankly mean. I don't like him. All right. Coming up next, Justin, looking forward to this. We have another peek behind the curtain. Last week, it was Roger Goodell's voicemails that we were able to tap into.
Yeah.
Today, it sounds like we're going to learn a little bit more about these four horsemen,
yes.
the four quarterbacks left in the playoffs. We'll go deep, a little deep dive into who's calling them next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, let's see what we got here from you guys. A couple texts before we delve into some voicemails. I'm excited for Matt Stafford. I want to know what's going on in his world. Texter here says, Salk, I'm too lazy to make green smoothies. How do you motivate yourself? I just do it before bed. I do it at night so that when I wake up in the morning, all of my food for the day is essentially done. And it's just smoothie after smoothie. I do that for 10 days and hopefully get back down to the weight I was at before the holidays.
Well, somebody asked me that too. I think it was at a Kraken game. He's like, does Salk make his smoothies or is he buying those?
Oh, no, I'm making them at night. And you basically just have to keep going to the store and buy a like every day. You're like, okay, you got to get more kale, shredded kale. I got to go get more baby spinach. I need more bananas. I need more apples. I need more frozen peaches and blueberries. And
they're not different every day, or they are different?
They're a little bit different every day because I just throw different combinations of fruit, but they all taste basically the same.
And are you doing any powders, protein?
Yeah, there's a little bit of protein powder. And actually, we ran out the other day.
Oh, no.
And so I had to use Heather's, which was like a specifically designed for women. And so my daughter kept saying that I was using mom's feminine products in my smoothie. And so whether or not that's the way, I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could look at that. I chose to think that, I didn't care. Yeah. So there you go. throwing mom's feminine products right into the smoothie.
The other question was like, is he getting up at 3:30 in the morning and blending all this together and
God,
making the family
I
up?
Do it at night, and then they go into a series of three or four different Yetis for the next day. So they're poised and ready to go and cold. And then the other thing you're supposed to do as part of the green smoothie cleanse is chew them. So you like take a drink and then you kind of like try to chew.
I'm not sure everyone else has as many questions about this as you do.
Justin's got a lot.
It's like I also see you eating an apple like every day.
Yeah, you can have a little fruit. You can have a hard boiled egg. But other than that, it's like green smoothies is sort of the driving force of your day.
Man.
I don't know.
It seems like you live it like you're a prisoner of yourself.
Well, it's not great, but it's better than some other things. And after the gluttony of the holidays, you got to do something to try to get back to where you want to be. All right, let's delve into your voicemails here, Justin. We are once again tapping into the voicemails. And rather than last week, it was Roger Goodell.
Yeah.
We heard Mark Rogers, John Schneider. We've heard some others. But now it sounds like we're going to talk about the quarterbacks today.
Yeah, I was able to access the voicemails of all the quarterbacks who are still alive in the playoffs. So
I like the idea of them just being still alive. It's all the quarterbacks alive out there that are still alive
period
in this post-apocalyptic football world.
So I'm going to start with my guy, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Maybe you guys can pick the next one. But I think you're going to agree, and especially because this voicemail speaks on behalf of so many people. Okay?
So this is Joe Burrow.
This is Joe Burrow's voicemail.
Please leave a message after the tone.
This message is for Joseph Lee Burrow. This is the United States of America calling with an extremely important request. We are aware that you are under an immense amount of pressure, but Joe, you are our only hope to keep Mahomes out of the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And we're not even talking about Patrick Mahomes, but his little brother Jackson and his TikTok dancing, if you can even call it that. Mr. Burrow, Joe Cool, Joey Ice, sir, the United States needs you this week. America thanks you in advance.
So true.
Yeah, we can't have him. People are not ready for Jackson Mahomes to be on the sidelines in Los Angeles.
I hope people know just how awful Jackson Mahomes is, right? I mean, like, I think we've talked about it a little bit. I don't know how.
Well, we read that response from the restaurant that he tried to call out on TikTok because they, like, didn't seat his large group that he came in with.
That wasn't good. That's, I think, what ended up getting me to look up the whole thing of who he is and his TikTok. It's like a million times where he's dancing to
this. It's not style. Yeah. I'm going to pick you up in a Cadillac like a gentleman.
Bring
a
glamour
back. Keep it real.
I'm sorry. Let me turn that down.
Dancer.
Oh, no, he's terrible.
I mean, which is fine, but maybe, like, don't make a living doing TikTok dances every day if you're not a good dancer.
Feel I could walk down the aisle. I want to do you like Michael.
He's terrible.
Yeah,
he's really atrocious. And I'm still a little bit mad at you guys for even introducing me to the idea of him and his TikTok, because then I ended up watching it, and now I know what that song is. So.
United States of America had a message.
Yeah, that was nice.
And
okay.
It's also that they Patrick Mahomes' fiance and his brother do this like at the games, like on the sidelines.
She was spraying champagne all over people the other day after the game. Then people got mad, right, or about her spraying champagne all over them.
Lots of comments on Twitter, like, if she did that to me, we would have a problem.
Absolutely. I thought G raised a really good point on that. Like, hey, I didn't see her doing that to people in the suite. She's doing that to the people sitting below her.
Yeah.
Let's see you do that to the people in the suite and see how happy they are when you get it all over their suit.
Hey, the rules are rules. Celebrate with your own sideline.
Absolutely, man. I think that's a pretty good point. All right, what else do we have?
Matt Stafford. He's still in the playoffs, and he got an interesting one as well.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, Matt Stafford.
Me, quarterback of the Detroit Lions, Jared Goff. Remember me? Hope you're enjoying the honeymoon phase out there in Los Angeles. Hey, you and Full Hawk McVay gonna go body surfing in Cabo after the season that was over? Whatever. I was never gonna be good enough for him, and guess what? You won't be either. Mark my words, Matthew. Short little McVay is just waiting to throw you out whenever the next hot thing comes around. And then pretty soon it'll be you selling Beach House before you even knew it. So don't say I didn't warn you, Matt.
What a tough time.
Yeah, I mean, a post-breakup version of Jared Goff, he still really seems broken up about Sean McVay kicking him to the curb, huh?
I mean, they kind of basically did just, like, switch lives.
Yeah. Like, I used to be in L.A. where I was cool, and now I'm in Detroit.
And I made the playoffs, and
yeah,
now you're in the playoffs, and you never made the, or you always lost in the playoffs. And,
Dan Campbell's yelling at me all day. Like, that's a, I do have some sympathy, I guess.
Cuddled up to a Zima and an IHOP.
Still, it sounds like he's taking it hard. Seems like he's really hitting the bottle. So I hope he's okay.
Somebody should reach out to him if you know Jared.
I hope he's okay. All right, so that's Matt Stafford. Who else do we have?
We got Jimmy G.
Oh, that's got to be good. I can only imagine who's leaving messages for Jimmy G.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Jimmy. Hi. Dolores from GQ. You know that our spring fashion line is about to come out. And I haven't been keeping track, but I was told that your little football season here would be done by now, all right? But I'm slightly worried. You know, I am under a deadline. You're supposed to be on the cover. So work with me here, all right? Just work with me. I'm begging you. Do me a favor. Protect the moneymaker, all right? The face. The face is so beautiful. We don't want to mess up the face. So here's what I'm thinking for the cover shoot. I'm thinking leopard print. I'm thinking jet skis, but I'm thinking classy. I don't want to have to call Tom Brady again, okay? Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Classy with leopard print and jet skis. I would say that definitely works, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't want to have to call Tom Brady again either.
I
like that. I was
maker.
Told your season would be done by now.
Well,
so
he's
now
still
we
playing.
Have to reschedule.
He's still playing.
Holding
so.
Up the fashion industry is not nice to Jimmy G. Come on, Jimmy.
So I would imagine you got, what, one more left here for Patrick Mahomes?
Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, big bro. What's up?
Jeez.
It's Jackson. Working on my dance. Hey, guess what? Mom said you have to take me with you if we go to the Super Bowl again. Ha ha. Told you. 5, 6, 7, 8. Hey, can you believe that we have now been to 4 straight AFC championships? I may not have had my best performance at last year's Super Bowl, let's be honest. Neither did you. F1, F2, F3, F4. Got a lot of people counting on us this year, bro. Can't let them down again. Chicken nuggets are for dinner, by the way. I'll see you downstairs.
Oh my God, that one got me.
Is it the counting that gets you?
Yes.
That's what gets me too. Yeah, that's pretty good. Wow. It's so cool that they're doing it together, man. What a tandem.
I know.
Like, you got Eli and Peyton and everything they accomplished in their career, and now you've got Patrick and Jackson.
Together, they've thrown for over 3,000 yards in the playoffs.
Very impressive. Good job, Justin. A lot of fun. Voicemails Wednesdays at 7:30. Just a little peek into who's leaving messages for whom out there in the world of sports. Good stuff. We'll talk to Brock. By the way, Brock still has his daughter, Haley, on his voicemail message. That's who, if you call Brock, you still get like a 9-year-old Haley. She's now in college, bombing threes for the Lady Grizz in Montana. He's got like a 10 or 11-year-old Haley talking on his voicemail about how Brock's too busy to talk to you. It's like the worst humble brag of all time. So we'll talk to Brock next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Good morning, Brock.
Good morning, Salky. How are you?
I'm good. The Hall of Fame thing has been kind of on my mind. We took some calls yesterday, and people were passionate about Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, etc. Congratulations to David Ortiz. Bonds and Clemens don't get in yesterday. What was your reaction?
Yeah. Well, you know, Titus has become a big baseball guy. It's his first love. And, you know, once you open Pandora's box of questions with Titus, you better be prepared.
Yes.
You know, you better sit down and get ready to answer a lot
of them. Lunch.
Yes. And he's, you know, gotten to see Big Poppy in the World Series set and, you know, understands who he is. He didn't and wasn't alive when Barry Bonds played for the Pirates when he was a Hall of Fame player before he just ballooned up into a big muscle ball, a steroid. And, you know, became the most prolific home run hitter in history. So I had to kind of walk him through all of that. And, you know, we got done and I said, this one's hard for me because you start parsing and saying, well, yeah, Dave Ortiz, amazing postseason player. You know, it wasn't tested or wasn't as clear with him as it was for Bonds and Roger Clemens.
But he was on a list of players that supposedly tested positive.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. So I have a hard time with these guys parsing it. And that era was flooded with anabolic steroids. We know that. It was flooded in the league. And I think in some ways just kind of turned their cheek and looked the other way as ratings ballooned, just like Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds did into caricatures of themselves. So to parse and to say, yep. And we even knew that for Mariners guys, right? Who was the skinny pitcher back in the day, the reliever that got that busted
Brett Boone? Edgar Martinez? I'm sorry. I'm just trying to come up with names. Sorry.
No, he was actually one that had tested positive. And you're like, he did steroids?
Right.
Like, come on. I could look at him. He didn't have a muscle on his body.
And I'm just kidding, by the way. I'm kidding about Edgar. I just thought I would throw that in there to make people mad. I don't have any evidence of that whatsoever. That's a total joke.
You're pretty good at that.
I'm just trying to make people mad. I promise. Do not call me and say Mike Salk accused Edgar of using steroids. I don't believe that.
But who did? Who didn't? How do you know? How do you point the finger? How do you keep this guy in, put that guy in, keep him out? Like it's just a mess.
Right.
Total mess.
Yeah.
And it's a bad look for baseball. It's unfortunately.
But would
you
put them all in? Would you have voted for Bonds?
I would have voted for Bonds because he was an amazing Hall of Fame player before he took steroids.
Well, all right. So, would you have voted for
Roger Clemens the same way?
Would
yes.
Would you have voted for Sosa? He was not an amazing Hall of Fame player at the time, but he did end up with over 600 home runs.
He'd be a little harder for me.
Really?
He'd be later on the list than Roger and Barry for sure.
I still
should be in there right now.
How about McGuire? Would you have voted for him?
Yeah, I think so.
Me too. And he was not a Hall of Famer pre-steroids. He was a good player.
He was.
Ryan Franklin, is that the name you're trying to come up with?
Is that the text toy helping out?
Yeah, helping out with Ryan Franklin.
Text toy, that text toy is brilliant.
Yes, of course it is.
You look forward to meeting that text toy someday?
One day. Well, yes and no. Kind of depends. Like, parts of it, yes. Other parts, absolutely
okay,
not.
So that's that question. Can I ask you a question? Because I know we're going to have do you have something else you want to talk about?
No, go ahead.
And we'll dig into this a little further today as we tape our podcast. I was just listening to Joel Klatt, who's very passionate about this, both the Baseball Hall of Fame thing. He was a minor leaguer after all, but much more so with all of these coaches. Now, Sean Payton out in New Orleans as well. I believe that's
nine vacancies.
Yep. He is of a firm belief.
And yet somehow guys like Cliff Kingsbury have survived. So, yeah.
Correct. He is of a firm belief that in college football, the head coach is the GM, the head coach, the quarterback, all wrapped into one. Mm-hmm. Like it is, you are the general.
Yep.
It is the most essential position in college football. Culture builder, talent recruiter, developer, everything. Scheme, you can just get away with so much more that the head coach is everything. In NFL, he's like, it doesn't matter. And I think we're seeing that right now with all these opening. Like it's all about your quarterback. It's all about your quarterback.
Yeah,
your quarterback is general. Your quarterback is everything. If you don't have one, it doesn't matter. It's A, owner who guides the ship and commits to the resources of winning, and then B, it's your quarterback. And the head coach is just whatever. Yeah, I mean, it's important. It's important lieutenant, but it is nowhere near in the standing of owner and quarterback in the NFL.
I'm not sure that's entirely true. Who chooses the quarterbacks?
The organization, the GM, head coach.
Right. I mean, usually
the front office.
Usually
right.
The head coach has a really, really big say in who the quarterback is going
to be.
Well,
this one here didn't pick Russell. So, right? I mean, that I think we know pretty clearly
that was John.
Yep. So, you know, and when Russell was out, look at what this team was this year. And, you know, look at all of these vacancies.
Well, it's a tough one.
And by the way, Sean Payton, who said, yeah, you know what, life without Drew Brees after a decade? I think I'm good. I think let me just sit out and find the next and wait for the next elite guy. And that elite guy can come free agency. That elite guy can come in the draft. That elite guy can come in the sixth round. That elite guy can come from different spots. So it doesn't have to always be the number one pick. And there's different ways. And you're right. The owner and the GM, the head coach play a role in that acquisition. But man, it's hard to disagree after what we watched over this last weekend.
No, of course the quarterback is the most important position in the NFL and more important than head coach. I think we would probably agree with that. But I don't know that I would say the head coach is just a guy, just another lieutenant. I think I would elevate it quite a bit beyond that. And there's just too many decisions that need to get made at the ends of games. There's too much clock management. There's too much culture.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, we've seen plenty of very good or even great head coaches who are not really diddly squat without a good quarterback.
Correct. And we'll see what Mike Tomlin is in Pittsburgh after now Ben Roethlisberger leaves. I said Sean Payton. I think a part of that is if Drew Brees was still playing at 35, mm-hmm. I don't think Sean Payton's lost his love for coaching. And
we've also seen
on.
Great teams and great quarterbacks that overcome mediocre coaching in order to win a Super yep. Bowl. I mean, certainly George Seifert's name will come up or yep. Barry Switzer's name. Now, they sort of inherited programs that were already working.
Correct.
So I think there's a lot of truth to all of that. I don't know that, you know.
So does it play a role as you spin it into this offseason with Russell? That it really doesn't matter if the New York Giants have two top 10 picks. It really doesn't matter who comes calling and who comes knocking, that it's just not going to be a situation that you even entertain. And if Russell and his camp want to do it, and if Russell and his camp want to do that or try to do that again, sorry, you know, we've got you for 2 years in a franchise and we will not budge, and you are our guy and we believe in you and we know what life is like. And we can look around the league at places all over this NFL mm-hmm. that have been in a purgatory searching to
find. But the other side of that is how many good young quarterbacks are actually out there right now, and that maybe there are more opportunities to get quarterbacks than there used to be. And do you still believe that Russ is at that level? I do. By the way, this is not me saying taking the opposite side, but for the sense of the conversation, you got to believe that Russ is still at that level, mm-hmm. right? There's this kind, you said it the other day, that it feels like he's been passed by some of these younger guys, and does he ever kind of get past them again? The goal is to win Super Bowls, not just to be very good, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
if you got to first determine that he's capable of that, then you got to look around and say, all right, well, you know, somebody found Joe Burrow. Somebody found Patrick Mahomes. Somebody found Josh Allen. Somebody found Herbert. You start yes. adding up the number of guys that are ascending. Somebody found Kyler Murray. I don't know if you would quite put him at that level based on the playoffs this year.
Yep.
But you could probably get to 5 or 6, and now all of a sudden that's 20% of the league.
That's right.
Right? I mean, that's not nothing. That's not insignificant in addition to the Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady's and some of the older guys, the Matt Staffords, that are still out there and potentially capable. All of a sudden, you can get to like 8-9 mm-hmm. teams that have a quarterback that you put in that category. That's not everybody.
And it's still
but it's not about, impossible.
No, it's not impossible, but it's still only about 25% of the
okay.
league. And even with those, it does take, you know, at times the right scheme and the right mm-hmm. coach and the right development and all of it.
And the right talent around it. And so, yes. you know, Jake and I have been kind of going back and forth over the Seahawks off seasons and kind of what they have done and not done. Good question today. When's the last time the Seahawks brought in a meaningful free agent? Who's the last meaningful free agent that made this team appreciably better? Not a trade.
Not a trade. Not an in-season trade. Not an out-of-season
trade. Can you come up with one? I mean, I guess DJ Reed would probably be the one. Since Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett? I mean, the answer is no. You can't. I mean, every year they go into free agency and they bring back nothing.
Yeah.
Some point, you got to stop.
They bring back some role players, Gerald Everett this year or Mike Iupati for their value and the money.
Those guys were fine, but made them appreciably better.
Okay, well, when have they gone big?
They haven't since Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett. And the point is, when they did that, they made their team better. And if they want to have a truly great defense, which I think they need to have, that's where you go find it.
Benson Mayoa, the first year, gave you a pretty good bang for the buck.
Fine, but did he make your team appreciably better than when you started free agency? He was okay. Carlos Dunlap's the one who actually made that better, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you want to make your team better, you got to actually, and I'm not saying go crazy in free agency.
Jokel?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Eddie Lacy? I mean, like.
We'll talk about this later.
All right, we got a podcast to do. Bye, Brock. We'll talk later. Later today, Brock and Salk podcast will be out, and we will delve a lot more deeply into all of this. All right, I'm going to switch gears. I want to talk some baseball, not just Hall of Fame, not just about the lockout, which, by the way, we've got some good news there. But specifically about this year's Mariners team, how do you not just get back to where you were last year, but get beyond that point to an even better spot? You're going to need some guys to play better than they did a year ago. So who's on that list? We'll tell you coming up next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.